to Animal Companions. This is Joyce Vesper, your Sun Sounds of Arizona Radio Reading Service volunteer broadcaster, welcoming you to Animal Companions. Today, I'll be reading some more information on the animals in our lives and how they affect us. We'll be reading from Bob Tart's Kitty Cornered, and if I have some time, I'll be reading some articles and newsletters about the animals in our lives. We're going to start today's readings with Kitty Cornered, How Franny and Five Other Incorrigible Cats Seized Control of Our House and Made It Their Home, written by Bob Tart. In the last reading, we learned that Bob and Linda had adopted a cute, seemingly calm, white and caramel-colored cat who turned out to be quite rowdy and took over the place of Franny as the most rambunctious and cutest cat in the entire pack. The only cats that were allowed outside were the ones that had come to us as indoor-outdoor beings. But Tina flew the coop the Saturday after Franny's vet appointment while I was traipsing back and forth between the goose pen and the basement. She must have been hiding behind the furnace, anticipating her escape. I had just finished filling the geese's wading pool and was on my way to shut off the spigot when Tina appeared beneath the bird feeder wearing her unusual, befuddled expression. She was anything but confused. As I froze and called her name, concerned that she might bolt, she bolted. So I did what any man would do under desperate circumstances. I howled for my wife. I ran around to the front yard, hit the shoulder of the road, and marched the width of the property searching for Linda's gardens for quivering leaves. I hoped that the semi-truck that clattered past would send her in the opposite direction, even as a cloud of diesel fuel pushed me away from the street. Although the dangers of the woods were less immediate than careening propane trucks, Tina could hardly get lost. I had heard of a tiny suburban yard that had swallowed pampered house cats whole. They would spend days huddled behind the backyard grill in clear view of the backyard while their owners shouted themselves hoarse. "I see her," Linda called. She had spotted Tina's squatty little white and caramel-colored body in front of a thicket of weeds. "There's that naughty girl," Linda cried, in the most complimentary and inviting tone of voice imaginable. The tip of Tina's periscope tail scanned us for the malicious intent, took note of my seething, and disappeared straight into the weeds. In hot and sweaty pursuit, I muscled through a wiry barrier of wild blackberry raspberries. The sunlight disappeared as I plunged into an inland sea of ragweed, goldenrod, garlic mustard, and ironically enough, catnip. Following Linda's sugary warbles through the uncanny darkness, I ran into an impregnable barrier of pokeweed bushes. Striking my emergency match, I barely missed colliding with a college-age version of myself, who muttered his disgust about the sorry, foolish creature that I and, or he, had turned into. Before I could defend myself, Linda called, "I think she's headed for the river." Pawing my way out of the undergrowth, I plodded briskly toward the water, thinking about the coyotes, foxes, raccoons, stray dogs, skunks, howls, nightjars, and chupacabras that would threaten her if she stayed out all night. After a dozen false sightings, we gave up. "She'll come back when she wants to," Linda said. "If she can find her way," I said. 30 minutes later, when I was buying a bag of crushed oyster shells for the chickens at the first prize feed mill, Linda phoned to tell me that the incident had ended the way these things always ended. Tina showed up scratching at the side of the door and immediately darted under the dining room table to bother our birds. Now I could return to fretting about Franny. The next morning, as I searched my bowl of grits for a lump that was small enough to pick up with my spoon, I wondered what I could do to ease her anxiety. As I wondered if Linda had grabbed a box of instant mashed potatoes by mistake, until I remembered that my oatmeal had often had a similar consistency. "We made a big mistake getting Tina," I said. "She's doing fine." "But Franny isn't," I said. "She's more soured on people now than when we first got her. She does nothing but hide from me now." "She's just sulking. Do something special for her and she'll forget all about Tina." I got a flash of inspiration. I wonder if cats like grits. but she showed no sign of budging from the narrow slot between the headboard and the wall, no matter what I did. "That Tina isn't anything," I told her. "She's just a normal, everyday cat. She isn't someone special like you." She whacked my hand when I offered her catnip, so I did what I always did with life offered me a challenge. I slid into bed, turned off the lights, pulled up the covers over my head, and, well, you know, went to sleep. I once had a friend who had suffered a mental breakdown. Whenever I visited him, I would sit on a chair in one room, and he would sit on a chair in the next room with his back against the opposite side of the wall. It felt like that was what's going on with Franny. We were two peas in a pod on opposite sides of the headboard. I kept telling her that I loved her as Maynard bounded up onto the mattress and plowed into my side. Meanwhile, we doubled our efforts to keep Tina out of trouble. Otherwise, our potted dragon tree would find itself in the middle of an excavation, or the ceramic knickknacks on the top of Linda's dresser would acquire the suicidal habits of lemmings. I grew weary of fishing fuzzy mice out from under the living room bookcase. Linda tried blocking the crack where a tile, but Tina dislodged the towel to her do list, and I ended up having to extract the towel, too. The next time I visited the store up the street, I cruised the pet supplies in search of a toy that would require minimum effort on our part while subjecting Tina to a maximum amount of tiring activity. A laser pointer seemed just like the thing. I couldn't wait till I showed it to Tina, and she couldn't resist chasing the fiery red dot up and down the walls. But the impossibility of actually catching her prey frustrated her, and after a few minutes, she whined for her mousy toy. I wasn't ready to give up on my investment yet. I poked the laser behind the headboard and made restless bug movements on the carpet with the red dot. Thrown, dangled, or rolled objects either intimidated or bored Franny, depending on the size and proximity. But switching on the laser flooded her with joyful light. Still lying down, she thumped the floor with her forelegs and snapped at the dot with her teeth. When the glowing ladybug proved difficult to grab, she followed it into the living room, sending Maynard and tiny Tina scurrying as she scuffed the rug with her claws, chasing the light in every tightening circle. Rolling onto her side, she continued her spinning pursuit, a breakdancing kitty in the throes of ecstasy. It turned into a nightly routine. Franny would seek out my company after dinner, dogging my steps like Maynard, and begging me to play like Tina. If Tina was in the living room when I flashed the laser pointer, Franny would fix me with a face that said, "Get rid of that thing." A few weeks later, Franny was waiting for me at the door with calculating eyes as I hung my umbrella on our coat rack. "Sorry, it's too wet," I told her, interpreting her attention as a request to go out. "We're not playing with the bug light right now," I said when she tried to follow me into the dining room. After I tweaked Bella's beak and greeted the other birds, I let her lead me into the bedroom for a nap. As I pulled down the shades and shut the door so that no other cats could be horning in, she followed the usual procedure of ducking behind the headboard. After a while, she might venture out for her snooze on the floor beside the bed. But just as I started to drift off, I felt a thump on the mattress near my feet. I didn't dare move as she paced back and forth before settling down beside me, close but not touching. Her breathing shifted into purring. The extraordinary moment was as satisfying as it was fleeting. Home from the chiropractor, Linda slammed the front door, launching Franny off the bed like a bullet from a gun. I didn't mind. I couldn't wait to tell Linda what had happened. I had squishy, squatty little Tina to thank for deepening the bond between Franny and me via the grasshopper-shaped laser pointer. And the tiny troublemaker had made Maynard happy, too. Since their meeting over a pile of tumbled laundry, they had become friends. Every morning, Maynard would march upstairs so that Linda could get a break from whining, and Tina would follow. Viewed from behind as they climbed the steps, Maynard resembled the full-loaded trailer of a lumber truck, while Tina gambolled like a chubby lamb. Once in the room, Maynard flopped down on the pillow and instantly fell asleep. Tina planted herself near the window to watch birds flittering through the front yard hackberry tree as she dreamed of escaping outdoors. They were our own Ginger and Gilligan, marooned on an island where they never quite received the full amount of attention that they craved. I managed and imagined Maynard in a sailor's cap and Tina in a coconut shell bra, brewing plans for rescue as ukuleles chimed in the background. But never in my sitcom-soaked imagination could I possibly have imagined the big change that was about to come over Franny. And next time, we're going to have to find out what exactly that big change was in Franny in Bob Tarte's book, Kitty Cornered, How Franny and Five Other Incorrigible Cats Seized Control of Our House and Made It Their Home. And now we turn to some other readings. This one is from the ASPCA, Issue 1, 2026, Healthy Pets, Beyond the Bowl. How's your pet's diet, and how can it change farm animals' lives? Did you know? If America pets formed their own country, they'd rank fifth in the world for meat consumption. Sadly, most commercial pet food is made from animals raised in factory farms, crowded into filthy conditions where they never feel the sun on their back or grass at their feet. What's more, labels can be misleading, and buzzwords like natural or premium aren't regulated, so they don't guarantee better quality or more humane sourcing. The ASPCA's Pet Food Progress Initiative works with leading pet food companies to help them source ingredients for more humane farms. You can explore the initiative at aspca.org/petfoodprogress or head straight to aspca.org/petfood to see which brands already have welfare-certified pet food treats. Don't see your pet's food on the list? Ask them to source more humanely. Your four-legged friend's food is more meaningful as a way you can make a difference for the farm and companion animals alike. This article is titled, Beyond the Bowl, How Your Pet's Diet Can Change Farm Animals' Lives. Happy Tales. Rescued puppies Ben and Jerry are now living the sweet life. Last March, two puppies, later named Ben and Jerry, were reportedly found abandoned inside a building without any food or water. After being rescued by the New York Police Department, both dogs were brought to the ASPCA, where they received medical attention, including treatments for Demodex, a skin condition found in puppies and young dogs that causes patchy hair loss and itchiness. Once their treatment was complete and the duo was given all clear by their veterinarians, Ben and Jerry became available for adoption. It didn't take long before these puppies found homes to call their own, doting couples who fell in love with them immediately. He ran into their meet and greet, jumped up on them, and started licking their faces. According to his adopters, when Ben arrived at his new home, it was as if he had been there all along. He now enjoys cuddling with his pet parents, always having at least a paw or a leg on them. 2 weeks after Ben was adopted, Jerry found his very own family. He helped mend his new family's broken hearts after they lost their former dog. He also quickly bonded with their 8-year-old son. While adopting a puppy came from his own set of challenges, the family tells us that they wouldn't change a thing about him. This article, Happy Tales, Rescued Puppies Ben and Jerry Are Now Living the Sweet Life, comes from the ASP magazine, ASPCA Action, Issue 1, 2026. This article comes from Best Friends Save Them All, their newsletter for 2025. It's titled, From Silverware Stealer to Therapy Goat. Some goats graze, but Tina enjoys spending her time snuggling with pigs and hogging the air conditioning. La Mancha goats are known for being friendly. They love people, they're curious in nature, and they have superior affectionate tendencies. Tina is all of those things, but also add to that list silverware stealer, air conditioning lover, and pig snuggler. Tina's caregivers at Best Friends Animal Sanctuary figured out she was special when she was kicked out of the goat barn by the other goats. As it turned out, they didn't really like her, and well, she didn't really like them either. What she did love, however, was people. Everywhere caregivers went, Tina followed. She went indoors with them, quickly learning how nice it was to nap in the AC. She stayed with caregivers during their lunch, stealing their silverware when possible. And she followed them to Marshall's Piggy Paradise, where she enjoyed the company of pigs and their dinners. Tina, indeed, is a character. So when Dahlia's Hope, a nonprofit organization that helps people heal and thrive after trauma, reached out about a therapy animal, Tina was at the top of the list. Not only would this girl get to spend time with people all day, but she would also get to hang out with their other therapy animal, a pig named Zora. To get Tina ready for the new people, a pig cuddling job, caregivers taught her to wear a halter, and once she was comfortable with that, off she went to her new home. According to the folks at Dahlia's Hope, Tina now spends her days snuggling with Zora, keeping the weeds down, and hanging out in a group therapy session, which she adores. As for her mischievous side, well, let's just say when it's time for lunch, you better hide your silverware. Cubby's newfound confidence. He may be paralyzed, but that doesn't stop Cubby from living his best life. Cubby is a fast little fellow with confidence of a lion, but he wasn't always so self-assured. In fact, he was found on the streets of New York, thin and weak, and he was paralyzed, something he was most likely born with. Caregivers at Best Friends Adoption Center in New York City were able to nurse Cubby to health, but they knew they'd eventually need more specialized care. So off to Best Friends Animal Sanctuary he went. At the sanctuary's Quincy House at Cat World, all the cats have special needs, so caregivers thought Cubby would fit right in wonderfully. But once he got there, he still seemed stressed. He began losing weight, came down with an upper respiratory infection, and just wasn't himself. But there was a solution, one-on-one attention in a foster home. Foster homes make a world of difference for animals like Cubby. They get all the TLC they need, plus they get to experience a home environment which readies them for adoption. For Cubby, that was certainly the case. With the help of his foster volunteer, he began to thrive, and he was spending time around the house, and he was speeding up and down the stairs in no time. Cubby will always require a little extra care because he can't use the litter box on his own. He'll need his bladder expressed a few times a day, but with his sweet and playful personality and his determination to have fun, we're sure it won't be long before his new family comes calling for him. These articles come from Best Friends Save Them All newsletter 2025. Our next reading talks about the creativity of engineers and dogs to help a lady with ALS. 3 years ago, Brooke Eby, now 36, received a diagnosis that could have cast a shadow over her life. Amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, also known as ALS or Lou Gehrig's disease. This condition affects motor neurons and the spinal cord, gradually weakening muscles. Initially, Brooke was informed that she might have only 2 to 5 years to live. However, she has faced this challenge with remarkable resilience and a positive spirit. Today, while Brooke uses a wheelchair to navigate her surroundings, she continues to lift her spirits and share her journey with humor on TikTok. Her infectious smile lights up her video, where she candidly discusses her experiences. One particular activity that she truly longs to enjoy again is walking her beloved dog, Dre. Brooke adopted Dre when she was 26, and they have been inseparable ever since, especially as they navigated the ups and downs of her diagnosis altogether. Recently, Chewy, a pet care brand known for its compassionate initiatives, stepped in to help fulfill a heartfelt wish for Brooke and Dre. Every holiday season, Chewy launches its Chewy Claws campaign, inviting pet lovers to send virtual letters to a festive version of Santa. For every letter submitted until December 24th, Chewy commits to donating meals to pets in need, aiming to provide up to 16 million meals through Greater Good charities. In light of this season of giving, Chewy recognized Brooke's desire to walk Dre independently, something that had been becomingly increasingly difficult due to her condition. Brooke had tried several adaptive leashes, but they often tangled within her wheelchair wheels and were not suited for Dre's small stature. Chewy understood that these limitations had taken away one of Brooke's favorite activities, walking with a furry companion, and the independence that came with it. To make a special holiday memory, possible, Chewy collaborated with engineers at Bold Lead Designs to create a custom adaptive leash that would attach seamlessly to Brooke's wheelchair. The innovative design allows her to enjoy walks with Dre once again, enabling both of them to share precious moments side by side. Katrina Baldry, a leash design expert, explained the importance of hands-free control for those with disabilities. The new leash design is easy to use, giving Brooke a renewed sense of freedom. "He caught on so well," Brooke remarked about Dre's response to the new leash. "He doesn't seem to notice a difference." Through this heartwarming endeavor, Chewy Claus is contributing $10,000 to Team Gleason, an organization dedicated to supporting individuals with ALS. This support helps them lead fulfilling lives despite the challenges posed by the disease. As Orlina Jung, Chief Brand Officer at Chewy, beautifully put it, "Chewy Claus celebrates life with pets, from everyday to extraordinary. We are especially excited to inspire joy, love, and connection during the holiday season." Brooke and Dre's story is a touching reminder of the profound bond between humans and their pets, illustrating how love and support can shine brightly in the face of adversity. This article is titled, "Engineers Create Special Leash to Help a Woman with ALS Walk Her Dog." We've all heard of various myths about cats and dogs, and here are some of those myths and whether or not they are true. Even with windows down, a hot car is deadly. Leaving a dog in a parked car, even for a few minutes, can be incredibly dangerous. Cars heat up shockingly fast, even with the windows cracked, and dogs have a harder time regulating body temperature than humans. Heat stroke can set in quickly, and once it does, it can be fatal. If you wouldn't sit in a parked car on a hot day, why would you let your dog do so? So, letting a dog sit in a car on a hot day is definitely not appropriate. Here's the myth. Dogs can't smell your feelings. Humans rely on words to express emotions, but dogs sadly don't have that luxury. Many assume that while dogs pick up on body language, they can't actually sense how we feel. After all, emotions are internal, right? However, have you ever felt your dog was closer than ever when you're feeling down? Is that real, or is it just in your mind, and is your mind playing tricks? Well, dogs can smell emotions. If you said this was possible, you were right. Dogs don't just guess your feelings. They can smell them. Their noses are 100,000 times more powerful than ours, meaning they pick up on chemical changes in our bodies. When we're scared or anxious, we sweat slightly different, releasing hormones like adrenaline and cortisol. Your dog doesn't see your nervous body language. They literally smell your fear. So yes, they know when you're having a bad day, and that's why they're always ready to comfort you. And here's another myth. A little bit of chocolate won't hurt a dog. Chocolate is delicious, and dogs seem eager to try everything we eat. We might feel tempted to share our pieces of chocolate with our furry friends. Many people believe that while chocolate is technically bad for dogs, a small amount won't actually harm them. If a dog sneaks a bite of cookie or a tiny piece of chocolate, it's no big deal, right? No, even small amounts of chocolate can be dangerous. Chocolate contains theobromine, a chemical that is toxic to dogs. The danger of it depends on the type of chocolate and the size of the dog. Naturally, dark chocolate is the worst, as it contains the highest level of theobromine. While a tiny bit of milk chocolate might not be fatal, it can still cause vomiting, diarrhea, or heart disease. If your dog eats any chocolate, call your vet immediately. You know the saying, better safe than sorry. Here's the myth. It's okay to give my dog ibuprofen for pain. When humans have aches and pains, we reach for ibuprofen or aspirin. Some dog owners assume it's safe to give their pups a tiny dose of the medication if they're injured or sick. After all, if humans can be helped by ibuprofen, it must help dogs too, right? No, not exactly. That's actually not the case. Giving ibuprofen to your dog can have serious, even fatal consequences. Dogs process medication differently than humans, and even small doses can cause stomach ulcers, kidney damage, or liver failure. If your dog is in pain, never give them human medicine. Consult your vet for safe, pet-approved pain relief options. What works for us doesn't always work for them. And those are some myths that have been debunked. Ever wonder why cats like small spaces? A cat can make quick work of disarraying even the tidiest linen closet or lingerie drawer. Cats are fond of closet shelves, drawers, baskets, boxes, or even other hideaways because they feel snug and protected in smaller, defined spaces. The sides of a basket, the walls of a box, even a box lid or a stack of pillows all provide a miniature fortress for Kitty when she wants to slip away unnoticed or simply enjoy an undisturbed nap. A cat who is especially fearful or upset might be found under beds and sofas. The harder to reach, the better. Kitty's love of cramped quarters is why cats don't mind cat carriers. From the cat's point of view, if the humans insist on hauling them to be the dreaded vet and back, please let it be in a sturdy, secure carrying case or even a stroller. It is the unusual cat who prefers to roam the inside of a car, and a kitty usually ends up under the seat anyway. So that answers the question, why do cats like small spaces? And that comes from Karen Anderson's book, Why Cats Do That, A Collection of Curious Kitty Quirks. Well, we've come to the end of Animal Companions for today. I do hope you've enjoyed the readings, and I invite you back again next time to hear more stories about the animals in our lives and how they affect us. Until then, this is Joyce for Animal Companions and for Sun Sounds of Arizona, a radio reading service. Be well, everyone. Stay healthy. Be happy. Bye-bye.